listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
USA and England's fate has been decided. The World Cup draw has been made. We take a look at the groupings for next summer's big tournament. Major League Soccer's season reaches its climax this weekend. Sporting Kansas City take on Real Salt Lake. Who will be the kings of US soccer? We chat with Carl McCarthy about all of the ongoings in the lead-up to the big game. And of course, we've got Premier League, Spanish, French, German, Italian, you name it. We've got it coming this weekend. We take a look at the big fixtures from around Europe. But really, there's plenty more important things to be talking about here on the show today. Welcome to Friday's edition of World Football Daily. A big thanks to everybody who's listening at the moment as we here at World Football Daily celebrate our fourth year of being a subscription web-based service. Delighted to say that we are still on the airwaves and plugging away here at World Football Daily to try and bring you some of the best football content from around the web and on the radio waves, so to speak. And we have some of the top guests in world football joining us week in, week out. That trend will continue, of course, today on the show. Carl McCarthy will be joining us, of course. We're going to be chatting once again with Mr. Christian Hennage to talk about the European perspective on the World Cup draw today. And, of course, big George Mateus will hopefully be joining us as well to give us a US perspective on just how they're going to do in their group. Before we run through all of that, obviously, there is the big game coming up this weekend as well in Major League Soccer. The MLS Cup Final, no longer dominated by the Galaxy and the Dynamo. We will finally have two new teams participating in the final after 2 years of the same fixture. Jason Kreis and RSL taking on an SKC side that many feared would crumble after the loss of Kay Kamara this season. That has not been the case. Graham Zusi and co. continue to impress out there in Kansas City. And now they are in the big game. Who do we want to win? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line and the Facebook page as well. And that is where we should kick all things off today, really. The World Cup draw obviously has big implications for next summer, but the immediate impact of Major League Soccer and the MLS Cup final this weekend takes precedent here on World Football Daily. And that's why I'm delighted to hand over now once again. And I think for the final time, normal service will be resumed here on World Football Daily starting next week. So for the final time, Rafa, take it away with a little bit of MLS Cup preview. Thanks very much, buddy.
What is happening, everybody? It's Raphael again on the last day of me filling in for Ollie with the interviews. And don't worry, everybody. Everything's going to be back to usual going back to next week. But I really appreciate all the emails you sent in. And I really had a great deal of fun doing all these interviews as well. Today is no different. I'm very, very excited to talk to Kyle McCarthy, who since day one, since the moment I've met this man has been hustling. And I mean that. This man is impossible to track down because his work is being posted around the clock, around the world, really. on so many different sporting media outlets. You can find him on Fox Soccer as a columnist. You can find him at the New England Soccer Journalist as a writer and a contributor to the Boston Herald and MLSsoccer.com. You can even catch him on the television or on your computer screens these days. So, Kyle, it really is a pleasure to get you on the show, on the line. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, that was an incredibly long introduction. I'm sorry, but let me jump right into a question straight from your Twitter page, Kyle. And you can find Kyle on Twitter, actually, at Kyle J. McCarthy. Now, usually I save these Twitter mentions and references for the later part of the interview, but being a man who likes to completely take in and soak in the atmosphere and environment around me, Kyle, I saw a tweet from you that just got me going. You tweeted, "Always something to discover in Kansas City. Big thumbs up to the plaza." Now, are you out and about in KC taking in the sights and sounds? And if so, what sort of like local landmarks might you suggest to people to visit, not just for the final, not just for the people who are there, you know, right now, but who are potentially going later in life or next season or next year or whatever to visit KC, whether that's for an MLS match or U.S. International even? Give us the pulse of the city that will be hosting the quintessential event in Major League Soccer, the Cup Final. What's the feel like today?
So I was out and about last night. It took a couple of hours and went down to this area called the Plaza. It's just a wonderful little mixed-use development down in South Kansas City, and I was really impressed by it. It was an area that I had never had a chance to go to because it wasn't en route to the stadium or the airport. So it was a pretty eye-opening experience for me, and I've had a few of those in Kansas City this year. I've been here a lot for a variety of different events, and this is a sort of city that has a little something for everyone, and I'm continually impressed by what this city has to offer, and it's just a wonderful place to come and spend a couple of days. So if you have a chance to go and do that, then you definitely should.
Do you have a barbecue joint or a restaurant there that you frequent or that you have to visit when you go?
I do. I always try and go to Oklahoma Joe's.
Nice.
Which is just a little gas station. It's literally a gas station. You walk in, you could literally fill up your car and then have some wonderful barbecue.
Awesome.
So I think that's the first place to start. But there are just so many options here for barbecue and for decent dining. It's really sort of across the board there.
Cool. All right, now staying in KC, I want to get your opinion on how important it was for SKC to host this final. Obviously, the club has had, you know, tremendous fans over the years, but the new stadium puts a little bit more of a pressure on a club as well. And after being knocked out by what feels like their playoff kind of kryptonite in Houston Dynamo, how much does hosting this final mean to the club and to its fans?
It's everything to them right now, and I think the fact that they were able to vanquish the Dynamo after those years of frustration and advance to MLS Cup is exactly what they had hoped for coming into this season. There's still a big job left to do, though, and they'll need to accomplish it on home soil. It's going to be difficult for them to defeat Real Salt Lake on Saturday afternoon, so they'll have to really take advantage of the fact that they're playing at home and in front of a fan base that is one of the most raucous in MLS.
Sure. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the stadium looks like. Obviously, you know, you see how dressed up it gets for a, you know, normal league game. Obviously, you go, but also the international matches, the way that they dress it up for our, you know, our international boys. It's really impressive. I'm very, very excited to see what the final looks like. I'm not sure what it is, but I get the sense of a relentless bulldog when I think of RSL, Kyle. Nothing is more clear when I see them play, when you talk to their coach. No matter what it is they say or do, I just get the sense that it's all for one purpose, and that's just to get back to that final and win the cup. Regardless of a major roster change it faced this season, RSL looked to be on a war path. What's going to stop Jason Kreis's men from lifting the trophy this season?
Well, that's a darn good question, because this RSL side has been particularly impressive in the way that it has managed to adapt to the changes that it had during the close season and find its way back to MLS Cup. I think when you look at this game on Saturday afternoon, you have to really assess how RSL and Sporting are going to find ways to negate what the other team does well. Mm-hmm. And if you're Sporting, the key for you is to find a way to disrupt the tempo of RSL in possession. It's much easier said than done. It's going to require a lot of use of the wide areas, and it's going to require a lot of diligence. But if you're RSL, the most important thing is to find a foothold in the game somehow in possession. And if Sporting can prevent them from doing that, then the home side will have a pretty good chance of lifting their MLS Cup.
Now, stepping away from MLS Cup a little bit, I kind of want to jump into this MLS State of the League address. I really want to think that it's cool. Like, I want to think it's a cool thing, and that the interested fan or media can really get a league's perspective on itself, see where the league's succeeding, where they need to improve, all that. I really love the idea, but I feel like it's also tough to watch, Kyle. I thought the commissioner was positive without being kind of unbelievably confident. He talked about the growth of the game. He talked about the interest in soccer across the country, the soccer-specific stadiums being built, all that jazz. But as someone who travels the stadium, yourself, Kyle, and covers this season like cheese on pizza, literally, what is your take on the league? Where does Major League Soccer stand 17 seasons in, and where can it grow?
I think MLS is in a good spot right now. I do have a chance to go and visit a lot of different venues around the league, have a chance to really get a sense of how a lot of different clubs are doing, and I think the progress is substantial, even from 5 years ago. But there's still a lot of work to be done. I think there are clubs that need some help. I think the level of play needs a boost to really compete at the highest levels. And I think that there's still some growing for MLS to do as a league in terms of how it functions and where it sort of places its priorities. So I think Garber is correct to be positive about where this league is. I think bringing in New York City FC and bringing in Orlando City and bringing in three more teams over the next decade will be important for this league, because I think this is a growth product. It's just a matter of managing that growth properly so you're succeeding both on and off the field at the proper pace.
Right. Now, I want to talk about the MLS Best 11, Kyle, but at the same time, I don't want to beat it to death. So instead, do this for me. Tell me who was your one player you'd like to export abroad as a good representative of our American soccer product. Now, take into account that, for me, I could look at Freddy Montero as a product of MLS, in my opinion, just because he spent some time as a star in Seattle. So you can go there too. But who would you like to kind of send off and hopefully find success for himself and the league that he came from?
I think at this point you're looking at a pair of Sporting Kansas City players as guys who could really go over and be successful. And that's Matt Beasler and Graham Zusi. Two guys who have been remarkably consistent for Sporting over the past couple of years, guys who have really emerged as genuine stars in this league, and guys who are key pieces of the U.S. national team. Mm-hmm. They're capable of playing at a higher level. It's just a matter of whether they're willing to go and pursue it and find the right situation, or whether they're able to get regular match practice. But when you look at how consistent Diesler is in the center of Sporting's defense, and you look at how hard Zusi works in midfield and the sort of chances he creates for his teammates, I think those guys are great representatives of what MLS is able to produce in terms of its domestic players and in terms of serving as a feeder system for the U.S. national team.
Now, just give me the name of a big off-season move in Major League Soccer, whether that's going to be Lampard, Klose, or Didier Drogba. Who's going to make the headlines for you, if you had to guess? I know this is kind of out there, but I like to. I'm going there.
I'm okay with a little bit out there. And I think the situation I'm monitoring right now is the mooted move of Jermaine Defoe from Tottenham to Toronto. Mm-hmm. I think it's a big deal that Toronto has set aside this massive transfer budget and has gone searching for a striker capable of scoring goals on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. They've really struggled in that department since Danny Koverman's went down. And if they're able to entice Defoe to swap Spurs for Ontario, I think it would be a remarkable move for TFC. I think it's a team that has obviously underperformed to what its resources suggest it should do on a yearly basis. And if you can bring in a guy like Defoe, a player who is capable of scoring a boatload of goals in MLS, I think it bodes well for TFC heading in to 2014.
And real quick mention, you mentioned Beisler and Zusi, back-to-back recipients or nominations for the best 11 in MLS. So yeah, I completely agree with you there. All right. Really quickly, just on the World Cup draw, I know it's coming up here in a second. We're recording this actually before the draw, so it hasn't happened yet. What's the one country that you don't or you want the U.S. to avoid?
Germany. I think Germany is a difficult matchup for the United States because you have that combination of power and skill. Mm-hmm. The U.S. can sometimes muddle through against teams that like to get the ball down on the ground and move it because they're so organized defensively. And they can sometimes deal with teams that have the sort of power and directness that can trouble other sides. But when you combine them, it makes it very difficult to cope with if you're the U.S. So I think Germany is the sort of side the U.S. should hope to avoid.
Fair enough. And if you had to call it today, who is your MLS Cup winner?
MLS Cup winner, I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be 0-0, 1-1, perhaps in an extra time. But if you look at it from all perspectives, I think you have to take the home side, Sporting Kansas City, to just eke it out. And I think it'll be very, very tight, and we'll have to see whether that comes to pass.
Kyle, thank you so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate you making the time. And I hope you enjoy Kansas City. You know, make sure everybody, you follow his tweets. Obviously, he's going to help bring the atmosphere to you a little bit. So, Kyle, again, thank you so much for joining World Football Daily today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Take it easy. Again, that was Kyle McCarthy. You can find him at Kyle J. McCarthy on Twitter. I personally appreciate someone who can take in their environment and soak in where they're at in the moment. So thank you very much for that, Kyle. Make sure you catch the World Cup draw. Obviously, it's going on today. It's I think it's about 45 minutes away from now. Very excited to see it. A couple teams that I'm really nervous about. One, Brazil, obviously, home country. You just don't want to catch them, if at all. I mean, if you could avoid them somehow in the entire tournament, I would. You just they've got way too much going for them. They have way too much they want to prove. And secondly, Italy. I don't know if you guys remember, we beat Italy recently in Italy. They're going to have a little bit of a point to prove there. And I guarantee you they have not forgotten that. And that's going to be just an incredibly immense driving force if they find us on the World Cup stage. They will remember that and they will punish us. I just guarantee it. Guarantee it. Other than that, I'm looking forward to it. Juice, let me know your thoughts, man.
Well, Rafa, you didn't get Italy, so I'm sure you're a little bit pleased about that. But Kyle there saying that he did not want to get Germany. The draw has been done. Big thanks to Rafa and Kyle for having that chat earlier about the World Cup draw and, of course, about the upcoming Major League Soccer Cup final this weekend. The draw, though, is the big story, and it's a big story for the US men's national team. Kyle said he didn't want Germany, but you have got Germany in what is an immensely tough group for the USA that includes Ghana and Portugal as well. Maybe the one positive to come out of it is that the USA will be playing Ghana last when they might need 3 points to get through, and hopefully Germany and Portugal can knock points off each other. We will run through the draw very quickly here for you. Group A, Brazil, Croatia, Mexico and Cameroon. If Mexico can find their form, that's a very tasty draw indeed. Three great sides, and Croatia, you never know what you're going to get with them. Group B, Spain, the Netherlands, Chile and Australia. Australia surely looking up at that group and wishing why, oh why, were they put there. But Spain, Netherlands and Chile, all excellent sides as well. Colombia, Greece, the Ivory Coast and Japan make up Group C. This will be a pretty underrated group, I think. Colombia, an outside chance possibly for victory down in South America. Also, the Ivory Coast, the last hurrah for Drogba and the golden age of Ivory Coast football coming to an end in spectacular style. And Japan, who impressed a lot during the Confederations Cup. Uruguay, Costa Rica, England and Italy. Group D, a terrible draw for Roy Hodgson. A big South American side, a tough European side, and Costa Rica. It should be fun, actually, because hopefully when we get Kim Tate back on the show, who was meant to join us this week, unfortunately scheduling problems, made a bit of a problem with that. But she's actually covering Costa Rica for the Daily Telegraph here in the UK. So should be able to get a bit of back and forth with her as we lead up to the World Cup. Switzerland, Ecuador, France and Honduras make up Group E. Argentina, Bosnia, Iran and Nigeria. Group F, a great draw for Argentina. Group G, Portugal, Germany, Ghana and the USA. What a tough group for Jurgen Klinsmann. And Group H, Belgium. They'll be kicking off as rank outsiders for World Cup glory this year, next summer, but kicking off in a very nice group with Algeria, Russia and South Korea. And of course, Group H, a very nice group in terms of the playing areas as well, where those games will be played. We're going to touch on that and a little bit of everything about the draw in just a minute I'm delighted to say, actually joining me now here on World Football Daily to talk a little bit about the World Cup draw from today is a man who's already been on the show this week, but we just can't keep him away. Mr. Kristen Hennage joining me once again. Kristen, mate, pleasure to have you back on board. Thanks for rejoining us here this week. And great to catch up with you on a day like this when obviously such a big day for world football with the World Cup draw taking place and a very tough group indeed for Roy Hodgson and his England side.
It's not the easiest, of course. I think there could have been worse draws. I think Spain-Chile would have really dented any optimism that could have festered. But again, I don't think the opponents they've been Ghana this time are insurmountable. Uruguay, again, are coming off a bad time of things with Tavares. They came into the playoffs and admittedly were rampant against Jordan, but not infallible. Italy have a huge question mark over Pirlo and his fitness, if he can get back into rhythm in time for that competition. They've been somewhat indifferent themselves of late, especially with the forward line. And I think, again, it's without wishing to be too disrespectful to Costa Rica, you're kind of hitching things on Joel Campbell at Olympiacos, the Arsenal striker, Brian Ruiz, who again is incredibly mercurial for Fulham, and Brian Oviedo, who admitted I would question how much of an influence a left-back can have on a side.
What about the travel arrangements at least playing into England's hands? But that game at Amazonia again at Manaus is going to be very difficult against Italy. The humidity will be a big factor. And the Italians, as we saw last time England played them, love to keep the ball and almost have England kind of running in circles in Euro 2012 around them during that game. If Italy can be that dominant again, it's going to be a very tough task in the heat and humidity.
It could. I don't expect Hodgson to be as defensive the last time. I think, again, he's had significantly more time with this team. And I think, again, that they've had the certain rise to prominence of more, I don't want to say talented individuals in terms of players who can play in small spaces. I mean, Daniel Sturridge is the name that jumps out to me there. I think, again, if you can isolate him with some of that Italian backline, there's potential he could cause trouble. I think, again, it's all about how you break down those battles and make it so they can't keep the ball. And that's not necessarily just chasing it. That's about improving your own ball retention as well, which is months away, of course. But if Hodgson ticks a good technically gifted midfield, there's nothing to say that England can try and impose that on themselves and be resolute in this. I think, again, we'd all love to see England rampage out and try and dominate Italy. But you have to be very clever with these kind of games, even more so when you, as you say, you're playing in temperatures that could slow a cheetah.
We're going to have a chance, obviously, over the weekend to break all of this this down, all the information, all the statistics, all the previous histories between all of these sides in the individual groups. But for the first reaction, Kristen, when it pops out at you, is this very much quite an evenly spread draw? There are a couple of groups that you could consider the groups of death, but there's also a number of groups that could go either way, depending on which teams almost turn up for their nations coming next summer.
Yes, completely. Again, I think I'm not too sure how much I subscribe to this group of death theory. But there are certainly groups where they're tight. I think that's possibly a better way to put it. And it comes down to those individual clashes instead of a smoother run for the likes of France, let's say. I think, again, Bosnia have huge question marks over them, same with Belgium. It's that unknown quantity. I mean, I think Bosnia is a wonderful story. You know, formed in 1995, bought their first kit from a sports shop in Zagreb on the way to that game, which they lost 2-0, and have now united a country that has the highest unemployment rate in Europe. So there's a huge swell of momentum building for Bosnia. Belgium have a lot to prove. I think there's a huge deal of expectation. I spoke to Simon Mignolet a few months ago, and he leaned towards that idea that, you know, there's a certain lack of pressure in the sense that there's a freedom for them to attack this competition because they've never been here before. But there's also the expectation of a wonderfully gifted group of individuals like Hazard, Lukaku, etc., coming together and being expected to do something. And invariably, I think, again, with tournament football, in general, there are those unknown quantities. You've even got teams like Greece, who notoriously defensive, played that really horrible game with Argentina that was 0-0, and the Kit Kat formation, essentially, two banks of five sitting behind the ball. Now, they've gained in Mitroglou a genuine danger in attack, and for that reason, it makes them a more dangerous proposition.
When you mentioned there about Bosnia and that group that they've been drawn in, of course, is arguably an ideal draw for Argentina, of course. When you take into the fact, obviously, it's down in South America, and we obviously see we don't see European winners and teams from outside South America winning World Cups down there. Argentina will be extremely buoyed by this, but is there also a danger of maybe complacency early on? The fact that there's, aside from Bosnia, really, we would expect them not to be tested too much throughout this group?
I think, of course, complacency is an issue. There's still a lot of time and football to be played between now and then. You know, there could be freak injuries that you have to consider. There could also be wonderful form and terrible form going into this tournament. The thing with Argentina is, it's just hard to look past that forward line. I think before they were too forcing it too often, I felt, trying to kind of squeeze all of their attacking talent into one formation. There's a bit more refinement to this current Argentina. They appreciate that we just have immense strength and depth in that position. So we have to play as a team rather than just kind of just go for it with this crazy formation. Perhaps Biel a good option for them, given his own tactical outlook on life. But I think complacency is something you have to consider. I can't see it coming from Argentina. I think they're very focused.
It'd be interesting to see what Argentina bring to that group and if they can treat it how they did treat qualifying and storm away went from their group and obviously into the next round. I'm sure we'll expect that. From Group A and B, Kristen, these are two very evenly matched groups, I think, across the board in general. Australia in Group B, how much of an X factor are they in terms of they've obviously strengthened and put themselves into that Asian qualifying mix for a reason because they wanted to test themselves more and grow as a nation in that sense. How much can we expect Australia to trouble the likes of Spain, the Netherlands and Chile, especially in terms of Brazil and Australia? The climate's obviously a lot drier in Australia to an extent, but there is some similarity in being kind of southern hemisphere in that tropical climate.
My apologies to any Australian listeners, but slim to none, and slim is just a part of the building, is how I would describe their chances. Again, too much reliance on an ageing crop and really not enough emphasis put onto ushering through that new generation, like Tom Rogic at Celtic, who, again, his own amazing story, having come through the Nike chance and salvaged a career. Again, the current coach, I think he's going to give more of a, you know, an emphasis towards that youth and give it an opportunity to shine. But again, against the likes of Chile, who are very regimented and know what they're doing and impressed immensely when I watched them against England and teams like that, you're going to struggle. And I think, again, this World Cup for Australia, it's about learning, it's about blooding those youngsters, and it's about building an experience with attacking possibly 2018.
Just finally, Christian, because I know you're a very busy man, so I'll let you get off and back to obviously a very busy work day for you indeed with the draw coming through today. But overall, in general, is this probably the most exciting draw that we could have hoped for? Obviously, there's no standout group of death, as we mentioned earlier, but the parity across the board of these groups make all of them quite entertaining to watch. Do you agree with that thought process?
FIFA tells me that every World Cup is the most and I'm inclined to agree with that. I think this one has thrown up some interesting things. Personally, perhaps it's the closet hipster in me, I like the fact that there are teams like Belgium and Bosnia coming to this. You've got the interesting subplot of Mexico, a team that went through four coaches in a month, as Giovanni Dos Santos said it. And he's someone who's very publicly criticised their lack of strategy throughout the ages, the age groups rather. And it's things like that, along with the likes of the USA, who I think actually could be that dark horse we're so desperate to catch, that make these tournaments so intriguing and make it seem as if the summer lasted just a week.
It will be a very entertaining summer indeed. We'll touch on the US in just a moment, but for now, Christian, thank you so much for joining us, mate, on a very busy day. We'll let you get off and out and back to the wonderful written words that you put down for us on paper. But we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed again, my man.
Always a pleasure, never a chore, mate. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, mate. Enjoy the weekend. Christian Henn is joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about the World Cup draw, the initial reaction to the draw that took place just minutes ago here on the show. And I'm delighted to say that we can listen to some of Roy Hodgson's thoughts about England's turning up with Uruguay, Italy and Costa Rica. Here's Roy Hodgson.
Well, it's a tough group. There's no doubt about that, I think. A lot of people, of course, are saying they're in tough groups, but there's no doubt that with Uruguay and Italy, we've almost got two number one seeds in our group, because Italy were very unlucky not to be seeded amongst the first eight. And, of course, we know how good they are, because we lost to them on penalties in the quarterfinals in the Euros. But the good thing, I suppose, is we do know each other, which isn't such a bad thing. And the other thing, I suppose, which is to some extent worked in our favour, that the game we've got in the north, where the conditions are going to be tough climatically, is against another European team, so we're both going to be in the same boat.
You spoke with great excitement when we spoke pre-draw. Do you consider that sort of worst-case scenario, the group that you've now got?
Well, I think you're always hoping, aren't you, for to be frank, there weren't many scenarios where you'd have been jumping for joy. There was a lot more scenarios where you'd have been thinking this is going to be very tough for us. So to get one that's a bit tougher for you doesn't surprise me at all, because, you know, there's a lot of travelling to be done in most of the groups, and our great advantage, I think, will be that being based in Rio, we've only got the one long trip, and then the other two trips to Sao Paulo and Belo Horizonte are relatively short trips and in the same neck of the woods.
Which is a big benefit,
yeah,
having been based in Rio, and that was what we were worried about yesterday, maybe having to potentially change that Rio base, but the two games very close in the group.
If we'd have had three games up in the north, then I think it would have been difficult, and there's no doubt that the climate in the north for European teams is going to be tougher. So I suppose in some ways we've got to regard that as an advantage, but it's going to be quite difficult to put a positive spin on the quality of our opponents, because even Costa Rica, you know, who are maybe the least known, they have a very, very strong team, and Jürgen Klinsmann was just warning me how good they were, because they were in their group in the qualifiers.
And I suppose there's a lot of England fans who, in the build-up to this, said that they wanted a strong group. I mean, look at the last World Cup, it was Algeria, Slovenia, USA, and people were happy with that group, but it turned out to be a bit of a struggle.
Sure. That's why we talked yesterday, and I was hopefully positive about the whole affair, and I'm still very positive about the whole affair. Because you just never know, you know, you don't win football matches on paper. You don't look at games and think this one we will win, this one we will draw and this one we will lose. You go out on each occasion, you know, 11 against 11, the field dimensions are the same, and if you're well prepared, you've got a chance to win all three of the games. So I'm not disappointed in that respect. And in some ways, as I say, having at least two of the three games in an area where maybe the climate would be a bit kinder to us, that was one of the things I was hoping for.
And overall, you think you look towards a World Cup in Brazil. This is it now. I mean, that's the final thing done. The next thing, there's a few friendlies to play, but then it will be here next summer.
Absolutely.
And it's hosted by a team who consider that they think they should win it. And everybody wants to be here. Some aren't, but England are.
No, that's the most important thing. We're here. We've got an interesting group. There's no doubt about that. Three top quality opponents. So the three games we play in the group are all going to be very exciting games, and I'm certain that they will attract big audiences all around the world. It'll be a chance to see the north of Brazil. You know, I've never been to the Amazon. It'll be a very interesting experience, both, not only for me, but for the rest of the team. And our good fortune in the sense that we have to play just one game up there is that it's against another European team. So, you know, what climatical difficulties there will be up there will be the same for both teams.
And Roy, one of the first shots we saw at the World Cup draw was you shaking hands with Nelson Mandela. It was a fitting tribute to him as part of that draw, and I know that he was somebody who really appreciated the power of sport and you enjoyed spending time with.
Well, I can't boast I spent a lot of time with him. I was obviously very honoured and delighted to meet him, and it was a great privilege to have the chance to shake his hand and have my photograph taken with him. But I can't claim to have had long conversations with him. But of course, we're talking about one of the iconic world leaders. You know, if you take, you know, even the last two centuries, he's going to be right up there with the people who have really made a massive difference. And I think when you talk about Nelson Mandela, you do put football to some extent in perspective. Here you're talking about a person who didn't just unify one nation. He did a lot for many, many other African nations as well. I was very, very sad to hear of his passing, but really pleased he had such a wonderful life and did so much with it.
That was Roy Hodgson there speaking just after the World Cup draw about England's chances of getting through that difficult group. We've spoken about it as a general. We've spoken about England, of course, with Mr. Christian Hennage. Karl McCarthy's told us that he didn't want to get Germany, but the US did. And I'm delighted to say we've got a US perspective on the World Cup draw. Joining us from the Mad About Football boys and, of course, from Goal TV and various other outlets from around the footballing world. It's the big man, Mr. George Mateus, joining us here on World Football Daily. George, it's a pleasure to have you back. It's been far too long, man. It's been a while since we had you on the show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, we have to do it more often. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
I think it's been like months since we last had you on. So there's plenty to catch up on, I'm sure. But unfortunately, in the last half hour, pretty much, this is the breaking story. This is, of course, the World Cup draw. First and foremost, your reaction to being in a group with a strong African nation in Ghana, Portugal with Cristiano Ronaldo, and of course Germany, one of the favourites for this tournament. Are the US going to get out of this group, or is it going to be an early flight home?
Okay, well, when I first saw the draw, the first instinct for me was, man, the US is done. I mean, done like overcooked meat on a barbecue. That was the initial thought. I mean, there was no amount of sauce that could clear it up. But then I thought to myself, well, okay, this is a challenge. If the U.S. can get out of this group, it will legitimize themselves as a soccer nation, so as a football power. So we'll have to see how it works out. But it is a very, very tough group for the U.S. And I'm pessimistically optimistic, we'll put it that way.
Pessimistically optimistic. You'll have to explain that one for me, George, I have to say. But for instance, the US isn't complete doom and gloom in that the first game is against Ghana, which could be 3 points in the bag nice and early on. And then when you play Portugal, it's in Manaus, that very much tropical region of Brazil. It's going to be like a sauna, but that might actually help slow down someone like Cristiano Ronaldo with the heat and the humidity. So on second kind of reaction to it, is it as bad as you feared? And will that Amazonian heat and humidity, do you think, be enough to get to level the playing field a bit for the US?
It could be. Yeah, it could. But I think you have to remember, US has a lot of European-based players, same with Portugal. So it will cancel out. Both teams will have to deal with it. So I don't know if it factors or favors one team over the other.
What I mean by pessimistically optimistic, I know that sounds contradictory, but pessimistically was the initial reaction to the group. And then optimistic is that kind of attitude where you say, you know what, okay, this is the group that we have. Doesn't look good, but we're going to take it head on. We're going to attack these teams and see what happens. In a sense, the U.S. really has nothing to lose because no one expects them to get out of the group. And very few people have the expectations that they will do anything if they get past the group stage. So the U.S., in a lot of ways, from an optimistic point of view, the U.S. can play freely. They can play without any pressure. And even Jurgen Klinsmann, I think the group stage draw there, the fact that they have Germany, Portugal, and Ghana, might have even in some way let them off the hook. Because if they don't play well, they don't advance. If they play well and they don't advance, then nobody can really say, hey, Klinsmann did a poor job. It was just, hey, the luck of the draw, three tough teams, and we were behind the eight ball, to use that billiards expression, from the beginning. So we shall see. It's going to be a tough, tough draw, but I think U.S. fans, if they really think about it, they're not going to be happy about it, but at the same time, they should be like, you know what, this can prove how legitimate we are and how much progress we've made as a soccer nation, as a football nation, if we are able to get out of this group.
I suppose as well, I mean, everybody talks about getting an easy group, and both England and US can vouch that getting an easy group doesn't necessarily make it an easy way through into the next round. Whereas, I suppose, as you say, we're playing these big sides. Also, it almost invigorates players to put in that extra bit of effort. We've seen that at the start of the season with a side like Aston Villa, who went to Arsenal, got a result, played against Chelsea and Liverpool early on and played great football, and then playing the Minnows seemed to drop off. Do you think the US could benefit from starting with a game like Ghana, knowing that they need to get 3 points if they're going to have any chance, and it almost encourages them to come out from the gates, as you say, with that pressure off, with the freedom to just play the best football that they can, and actually we might see better performances from Klinsmann's side because of that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, I'm as an Arsenal fan, I still can't believe Villa got a point on us, so that's a different debate, right?
You don't hold grudges there, do you, George? There's no holding a grudge there.
No, I don't hold grudges. No, not at all. You know, no way. And I can't complain. Arsenal's first place, they're playing great, so I have to let that go. But you're right. I think they can play freely. They can play very freely. They don't have that kind of pressure. Now, I know here in the States, people will be still very have high expectations for them in terms of progressing through the next round, even though the optimism is low. They'll still have those high expectations. They'll still feel like the U.S. should be better than what they did last time in South Africa. But they don't have anything to lose. So, and sometimes those are the teams that are most dangerous. The teams that play freely, that feel like they have nothing to lose, that no one's expecting outside of the U.S. is expecting much from them. Those are the most dangerous teams. And, you know, people say easy groups. I don't know. I understand group of death, and I believe that theory, if you will. But outside of that, really there's no such thing as an easy group. You're talking about the 32 best teams in the world. It's not going to be easy for any team. It's not like any team is going to go in. You got to remember, this is World Cup. This isn't, you know, the first knockout stage round of UEFA Champions League qualifying where you have the second place team for Bulgaria taking on, you know, the second place team from Macedonia or something. These are very good teams. So no group is easy. The group of death is, of course, just goes by kind of reputation of the teams and maybe their form heading into the tournament. But I think you're right. None of these teams really, U.S., I should say, they can play very freely because the pressure, because of the draw, the pressure is off.
In terms of those reputations, though, George, I mean, when you think about these groups and you look through it, which one is the one that you think is the group of death? Because there's a couple to choose from, a fair bit of speculation about which one really is the toughest group to be in. Group B stands out with Spain and Netherlands, Chile and Australia, almost the unknown factor, of course. You've got, obviously, Group right. D, Uruguay, England, Italy and Costa Rica. And then you've got the USA's group as well with Germany, Portugal and Ghana. Which one is the group of death if you were to place that label on one?
Well, for me, it's got to be, that's a tough one. You know what? I'm going to say D. With Uruguay, Costa Rica, England, and Italy, You're talking about Uruguay, the last year's semifinalists. They finished, you know, finished above expectations. Well, they finished fourth place in 2010. I shouldn't say last year, but 2010 at South Africa. So they were semifinalists. And in England and Italy, two traditional European powers. Costa Rica, very sneaky team in CONCACAF. So I would give Group D the edge over Group G, which is obviously the U.S.'s group, because I think you got to remember England, Italy, they didn't go to a playoff. They won their groups in Europe. Portugal had to squeak by Sweden. So I give, because of that, I give Group D the edge in terms of the group of death. And the United States, they struggled against Costa Rica. I know U.S. finished at the top of the CONCACAF hexagonal, and Costa Rica was second. But Costa Rica gave U.S. some very difficult games. They might have swept the U.S. if it wasn't for that snow game in Colorado a few months ago. So it's I would give Group D the slight edge over Group G. I would give Group D the group of death label.
Costa Rica almost a side that are very much underrated and underestimated then from this draw, because I think as a lot of people's initial reaction has been, well, we've got Italy and we've got Uruguay, but at least we've got somebody like Costa Rica to kind of give us a fighting chance and 3 points from an English point of view. Is that something that we should be very sceptical about having? Because actually, when you look at them in CONCACAF, they are a side that's caused problems for the bigger nations.
Oh, absolutely. Costa Rica is not going to be a very easy win for any one of those teams in that group. Costa Rica played Uruguay very tough in the 2010 Intercontinental Playoff to get into South Africa. They played Uruguay very tough, and they are no slouch at all. They have very talented players, and they can cause problems for any team in that group. Now, I don't think they'll get out of the group, but they will make life very difficult. So if the English or the Italians are thinking Costa Rica is going to be an easy win or it's going to be less difficult than Uruguay, they're going to be sadly mistaken. Costa Rica can surprise teams. I don't think they'll get out of the group, but they will certainly give England and Italy a run for their proverbial money. And Uruguay already knows that, so they're not going to underestimate them. But England and Italy, because they don't have the familiarity of them playing, obviously because, you know, they're in Europe and we're here in the Americas. Costa Rica's no joke. They can take it to those teams. I don't think they'll get out of the group, but they can take it to those teams.
George, how did you watch the draw, by the way? I'm always interested to know. Obviously, some people and some of our guests are lucky enough to be down in Brazil and watched it at the event. Some people huddled around TVs, others with respective national team members watching it. What about yourself? Was it a couple of cold ones watching it like myself, or was it more studying the TV with papers spread out in front of you and going through all the analysts and analytics and stats of the draw?
Oh no, man! I was a couple of cold ones, a little buzz. I went to Mickey Burns, is a Irish pub in Hollywood, close to where I live down here in South Florida. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers, which is like a lower division soccer team, football team down here in South Florida, they were hosting a little watch party for the draw. And it's Friday afternoon. I'm off. I say, hey, let me go down there and watch and chill. So I drank a little. I think I had like two dark bottles of Guinness. I'm not a big beer drinker, but, you know, they had beer there, so I might as well. And I've watched the draw and got a nice little buzz. Not enough for me to be impaired to make it home, but just enough to be smiling all the way. So it was fun. It was fun to go there and watch the World Cup draw.
And I'm sure there were some people that needed maybe something slightly stronger when the U.S. was put in that group with Germany, Portugal and Ghana, that's for sure. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of people celebrating the World Cup draw, depending on who they've been drawn with today.
Oh, yeah.
George, mate, we really appreciate you coming to the show and having a chat with us about the U.S.'s potential progress through the World Cup. But I get the feeling that if you and I are down at the World Cup, my man, we'll be on the same flight home with England and the U.S. going out reasonably early, I would imagine. But fingers crossed, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, more than anything, I just want to see how they play. But even before the draw, I was more concerned about how will they play. That's always been the big factor for me. I really don't care. My expectations are reasonable. I don't think they're going to win a World Cup. They probably won't win a World Cup in my lifetime. We'll see. But as long as they play well and just don't make silly mistakes and make U.S. football look bad, That's all I care about. So now they have a chance to prove how well they can play on the biggest stage in the world. So we'll see. But I don't know if they're going to make it out the group. I am really, really. I mean, if you have to put a number on it, it is infinitesimal. I don't know if I said that word right, but it's very small. We'll put it that way.
It is going to be difficult, but I'm sure I think everybody just hopes that the World Cup brings us that entertaining football once again after a couple of slow tournaments, I think, to say the least, the last two. And teams leaving with their head held high is what we want to see. George, mate, we appreciate you coming on the show and having a chat with us today, man. And we will catch up a lot sooner than the gap that it's been to get you back on the show, my man. But enjoy your Friday afternoon off in the sun down in Miami.
Thank you very much. I appreciate talking to you. And yeah, we'll definitely talk soon. And we got to get the Mad About Football podcast back up and running for everybody so we can get it back on World Football Daily and entertain the people like you guys do all the time.
I think I speak for everybody listening when I say that we look forward to your return, my man, and the Mad About Football boys getting back on worldfootballdaily.com. But for now, a big thank you, George, man. Take care.
All right, you too. Oh, and one more thing. I know Juan and Mike, my World Mad About Football compatriots, they are smiling from ear to ear after Colombia and Argentina's draw in the World Cup. So I got to give them a shout out for that. Yeah,
I think Argentina must be kind of licking their lips with glee with Bosnia, Iran, and Nigeria. That's for sure.
Yeah.
We will catch up soon, man, and enjoy the weekend, bro.
All right, thank you. You too. You take care.
Take care, man. George Mateus joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things World Cup draw, especially for the US, given that devastatingly difficult draw with Germany, Portugal, and of course Ghana. Will they make it out? Let us know your thoughts. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. Well, we've pretty much done all we can on the World Cup at the draw at the moment. We will be breaking this down over the weekend and finding out stats, figures and facts about the groups that are ready and set for Brazil 2014. But this weekend, of course, there is still plenty of football taking place as club football returns to the forefront once again. In the Premier League, we have Newcastle against Manchester United, the early kickoff, Palace against Cardiff, Liverpool, West Ham, Southampton against Manchester City, Stoke against Chelsea, West Brom against Norwich, Sunderland against Tottenham, Fulham against Villa. On Sunday, Arsenal take on Everton. That's going to be a really interesting tie indeed. And then on Monday night football, Hull City against Swansea. There's not really much time to get in the IKTS scores, so what we will do is we will tweet those out on at WFootballDaily, and of course on our own individual Twitter handles as well, Juice_Wilson. Ligue 1 gives us football tonight. Marseille take on Nantes, the newly promoted side, Nantes, who are still having a great season. Then tomorrow, PSG at 4 o'clock English time take on Sochaux as they look to bounce back from their loss to Evian. Lorient take on Rennes. Reims take on Nice. Evian take on Saint-Étienne. Valenciennes take on Guingamp. And then on Sunday, Bordeaux meet Lille. Bastia meet Lyon. Toulouse meet play Montpellier. And Monaco will meet Ajaccio as we head across to the Bundesliga. And tonight, Nuremberg take on Mainz. Gladbach tomorrow take on Schalke. Frankfurt take on Hoffenheim. Hamburg take on Augsburg. Bayern Munich take on Werder Bremen as they look to continue that unbeaten run. Stuttgart meet Hanover. Dortmund take on Bayer Leverkusen. Another difficult game in a very difficult last few weeks for Dortmund as Freiburg meet Wolfsburg on Sunday. And Braunschweig take on Hertha Berlin, but I'm really looking forward to getting in to that Dortmund game on my return to the country on Sunday. I'm actually going to be in Germany over the weekend, but not covering football. I've got a boxing match. I've never done this before. Fisticuffs. I'm going to be calling for red cards all over the place. People raising the arms to the face and whatnot. Can't be having that. In Italian football, Bologna take on Juventus tonight. With tomorrow, Livorno taking on AC Milan and Napoli taking on Udinese. Roma meet Fiorentina on Sunday morning. Calgary take on Genoa, Sampdoria take on Catania, Sassuolo take on Chievo, Lazio meet Torino, Verona meet Atalanta, and Inter take on Parma, and of course in La Liga, last but not least, Levante take on Elche tonight, with Osasuna against Real Madrid, Real Vallecano taking on Granada, Villarreal, the Yellow Submarine meets Barca, and then Malaga take on Getafe with Almeria against Espanyol, and Real Sociedad against Betis on Sunday, along with Sevilla against Athletic Club, Atletico Madrid, Valencia, and Monday night sees Valladolid against Celta Vigo. That is all we have time for here on World Football Day. Remember, Remember, get your tweets and emails in, show@worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 3109984833 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. A big thanks to Carl McCarthy, Christian Hennage, and of course George Mateus as well for joining us here on World Football Daily. Who's going to be the MLS Cup champions, and will it even make the headlines after an incredible World Cup draw? We will find out on the weekend. Go Sporting Kansas City from me. I'm sure you RSL fans are really hoping that Jason Christ can pull it out for you. We will talk about all of that on Monday when we return, but in the meantime, take care. Have a cracking weekend. Enjoy the football and try not to be too worried about the World Cup draw. Have a good one.